This is Cameron Marceau with Black Liver Project, Monster in the Glass.
I'm here with Jason Cruz, our historian and researcher for our cocktails. And we are going to be doing the next cocktail, which is the Flying Dutchman. I mean, everybody has heard that name before, those words, but I don't even know if I really knew what they were, even if it wasn't a cocktail, because it's not originally a cocktail.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's those two words together, you're like, yeah, ships and ghosts or something.
You know what? I wouldn't have even said that. I wouldn't necessarily have known that. It's right. like, is it a horse rider? Is it like a warlock on a broom? some flying man? I don't know. I guess maybe deep in my psyche, I knew it was related to ships. I can't say I'm entirely sure. And I did notice that there is a train called the Flying Dutchman in England. So, I mean, the name, those words put together have this kind of power that invokes mystery and speed.
Yeah.
So
not the amphetamines. Not, or maybe, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, it's those Dutchmen and their speed.
You know, like truckers, probably sailors you gotta keep going. So
that was the Flying Dutchman was a cross-country trucker.
Yeah.
From Oklahoma.
Yeah. That's totally what it was about.
No, actually, if he was Dutch, he'd probably be more from Minnesota. Or
Minnesota,
something.
Yeah. That's true.
Minnesota.
The cold.
Hater. Okay, so with the cocktail called the Flying Dutchman, where does it come from?
As far as I can tell, the only place I could find it is in the book that Haig talks about, which is the International Cocktail Guides by W. Slaughter, who he says is a barman at American Hotel Amsterdam. He points out that the book is published in 1950, which means that it is still in copyright, which means I couldn't get a hold of a digital copy.
If it's in copyright, you can't get a digital copy?
Often, unless the author gives the permission to have a digital copy available. Now, let me backtrack and say that it's not impossible to get a digital copy, but if it's up online, it's illegal if it's still within copyright. Most of these things, it's probably a pretty rare book. I couldn't really even find anything. Usually I can dig around and it's like, oh, some dude scanned it and put it up online on his own site. But this one is, I'm guessing Dutch. He says it's Dutch. I'll take his word for it there. I couldn't tell you any other way to find the information.
Can we call the author of the book and ask him to make a digital copy?
He's probably dead.
Well, shit.
Yeah, right. And the other thing is, if it is Dutch, they follow different copyright laws than the United States.
Isn't everything free in Dutchland?
No, not that I'm aware of. And maybe they would. I mean, maybe it would just be something that it's more probable that nobody's really ever heard of this book. I don't know how Haig got a hold of it. It didn't seem to come up in very many places at all, even just searching around.
Who's the author?
W. Slaughter.
Okay.
In any case, I couldn't find it, so I couldn't verify the ingredients. I couldn't verify anything else, other information that might have been in the book. I looked around. I couldn't find any other indication of a cocktail by the name of the Flying Dutchman. So it's not to say it's not out there. It's just the books that I tend to search are pre-1950 because of copyright.
So in other words, you pretty much nailed the source. There's not like various sources like we saw in the Derby and
almost all of them. Like
no.
The East India had a Blue Moon.
Derby, I think, was the biggest example.
The Blackthorn, there was another one. That was another one.
But the Derby was the example where there were just so many
recipes. Yeah.
And it's just because it's a popular word. Now, Flying Dutchman, there's a lot of mythology behind that. I would have expected there were more to it. But you're saying that you only found one source.
That talked about it in a cocktail. Now, again, you just pointed out something really, really important, is that the Flying Dutchman is everywhere. Phrase Flying Dutchman, which makes it really hard to search when you're doing, because you do have to throw in words like cocktail or drink or bar or anything like that. I didn't find anything. Again, I can't say that there's nothing out there. I certainly could have missed something. I searched through a dozen or more recipe books from the 1860s through the 1930s, and I couldn't, You know, I didn't. Nobody had anything called the Flying Dutchman. Now, the ingredients, Ed's Haig also points out, is they're not tremendously unique. The only one in there that is unique in a way is the orange gin.
The rest,
you know, orange, lemon, and Angostura bitters. You can't search that in recipe books together. It's just...
Yeah, I've found it difficult to find orange gin, actually. Procuring the ingredients to bring to the Brixton for Michael to mix with us, I actually had to go online.
Yeah.
It's not stocked. At least as quickly as I need to get the ingredients, it's not readily available in some of the obvious places.
Right.
So...
Well, and Haig makes a comment in his notes that from the 1930s onward, fruit-flavored gins were considered respectable cocktail agents, but says that it's hard to find nowadays. Actually, he's slightly wrong there, in that it shows up well before 1930 in quite a few places. Not necessarily in this recipe, but it does show up in recipes, which to me means that it was at least semi-heavily used, because all of the places I found it, you know, you have Chicago, Boston, New York, London, that these things are showing up. So there's a few recipes that I found in Jack's manual on the vintage and blah, blah, blah production. There's one called The Cocktail Book, a sideboard manual for gentlemen from 1913. And then Straub's manual of mixed drinks, which I use quite a bit as well, all had recipes using orange gin. And then Patrick Gavin Duffy, who's turning into Be My Idol. I don't know his book. I don't know why I like his book so much, because he just has so many recipes, and it's post-prohibition, which I find really interesting. He doesn't really give any information about any of the drinks, but I guess I have a man crush on Patrick Gavin Duffy.
Yeah, it's a total bromance, man.
But I did also find some recipes for making orange gin, which in the 1800s, I picked some where I thought the titles of the books were better than the recipes for the orange gin, which, as far as I could tell, was basically just throw some oranges in some gin, let it sit.
Yeah,
that's your UF confusion. Orange gin. Yeah. But the books I found, Tempting Dishes for Epicures and Invalids, containing 150 recipes.
Invalids. We're back to the invalids. Everybody's serving the invalids.
1897.
It was with the cola.
Yeah. Tonic. 1889, Foods for the Fat, a treatise on corpulency and the dietary for its cure.
Oh, that's
great. Which is funny that they're recommending drink gin for, you know, to stop being fat or an invalid, I guess. I don't know.
I bet, I'm trying to recall, there was a thermometer of drinking habits and such that Kristen Burton sent to me. It's like from the colonial period, you know, all the things that you suffer as you sink deeper into your drinking habit. And I think thinness was part of it.
Oh, yeah.
And also... become degenerate. That's like a physical ailment as well.
Well, you know, if you think about it, though, it depending on what you're drinking. If you drink rum, that's pure sugar. You probably are not. Well, I guess it depends on if you're eating that.
It also depends on what you're doing all day.
Yeah.
You know, if you get up and drink a bunch of rum and then go work on a ship climbing the mast and the rigging and stuff.
Well, just sweat it off. That's
exactly. You know. If you survive, if you don't fall from the crow's nest.
Which you will. Let's be honest.
Okay, so orange gin. What I found was orange gin from Gordon's. So when I see that, I'm like, why is this so hard to find? Maybe it's because everybody expects orange to be in vodka.
I think that's probably the case. I can't even think of any other alcohol where they just throw shit into it to... It's not. I wouldn't even call it infusion. It's just like some of these flavors. I'm like, ugh. I see these Absolut bottles, and I'm like, why? Why would you want to drink that shit?
Really, vodka and gin are the same thing. They're an aged spirit, except gin has more of a history because it's infused with herbs and spices and stuff like that. So, if you're gonna put strange flavors or fruit or cupcakes or something into a spirit, it's gonna be vodka. If you're throwing leaves and herbs and stuff into it, then it's going to be gin.
Dirt-flavored gin, do we have that?
I think that's where... Though, I'm totally talking out my ass because I don't technically know. I need to talk to a spirits guru about it. But, like, it seems to me that that's where it goes.
True.
You know, otherwise, because really, gin is just flavored vodka.
It just has more of a
history. Yeah, I mean, you have verbs. I mean, so it's not so far-fetched to have orange gin, which is probably why you see a lot of it in the 19th century, but not really in the 20th century.
Was there vodka in the 19th
century? That's a good question. I don't think I've ever looked at it.
Oh, no, so you, yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that it... The,
I mean, the, I haven't seen vodka recipes coming up.
Vodka really was kind of introduced to the U.S. slowly in the 20th century. One of the biggest things that introduced it was the Moscow Mule. Prior to that, it was pretty much gin, and gin was already flavored with things. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to flavor your distilled spirit, your unaged distilled spirit with fruit, prior to 20th century, then you were probably starting with gin. That's my guess.
Yeah, no, it, that makes sense. And they have recipes in these 19th century recipes for how to make flavored everything in liqueurs, so, which is really cool to look at. I mean, it's always like, take a stone jug and you put fruit in it and you soak it in gin or whatever. So I mean, like, who knows why it went out? Probably at a certain point, and I would certainly guess during Prohibition, that the bathtub gin, you probably weren't eager to soak things in it, to infuse it. It was more just masking it, yeah. masking the flavor. So, you know, who knows? But there's one more I wanted to point out that had a really interesting title, and this goes back to 1864. This was the oldest one where I found an orange gin recipe.
That's old.
It was from London. One thing about titles in the 18th, 17th, 16th century, the titles were very long because they wanted to make sure you knew exactly what was in the book. So they told you everything that you were going to read. So the young housewife's daily assistant on all matters relating to cookery and housekeeping, containing of bills of family fare for every day in the year, which include breakfast and dinner for a small family. This is still the title. And dinner for two servants, colon, also 12 bills of fare for dinner parties and two for evening entertainments, with the costs annexed, also diet for invalids, again, invalids, and a few things worth knowing. That's the whole title.
That's, you know what, that's like...
That's the preface. I don't know why.
I think I prefer that to 50 Shades of Grey. Like, what the fuck is that?
I don't know. That does not tell me what's in the book. This tells me what's in the book. Everything that I'm going to read is in the title. That was pretty common. I love reading titles like that because it just goes on and on. And then you're like, usually they just made these like summaries or throw it on the back.
Yeah, so, nowadays it'd be like stuff you should know.
Right. Well, they did that. A few things worth knowing. In addition to...
That was an addendum. Right? Yeah.
There's okay. more, but... So the orange gin, I just wanted to point out. So they were using orange gin. It does seem to, around the 1930s, you know, who knows, it probably died off. So, the Flying Dutchman legend.
Okay.
Now that's a whole big mess of all kinds of legends and myths. And,
so where did it start? Because, like, we all know those words. We probably don't have a whole lot of background to what it actually
is. I'll tell you where one of the theories of where it started, but I'll tell you for people who don't know what the Flying Dutchman legend is. It's a ghost ship that haunts the Cape of Good Hope, which is near South Africa. And apparently the ghost ship would lure other ships to sink or cause them great misfortune. And there's a legend about a Dutch sea captain named Vanderdecker who attempted to go around the Cape of Good Hope, was stopped by headwinds. And this is, I'll say, that this is just one of the legends. This isn't there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, just real quick, the Cape of Good Hope. You know why it's the Cape of Good Hope?
I do not know.
It's named that because of the optimism of opening a trade route to India.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Makes sense.
I always thought that it was because you hoped that you got the fuck around that thing.
Right.
Because right there... is nasty ass weather. Like,
yeah,
because
you're
time.
Heading way south.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a confluence of the water temperatures, you know, meeting up, causing strange pressures and weather currents and such that you have to really hit the timing right to get around there without having problems.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And they knew it. That, you know, people went down there so much, or because... It was the goal to get around, to get to India, and it was so challenging. The first person to actually do it was Bartolomeu Dias. He's the Portuguese world traveler. He went around, I think he went around the whole world.
Hmm.
but he was the first one to actually do it. According, there are some people who say the Phoenicians did, but I mean, there's no proof of that. Right. No, it's not on any tablets or anything. after the Portuguese made it around the first time, then the Dutch quickly moved in and
figured it out.
Yeah, they took over the whole thing. It was a Dutch area for a long time, like much of it was because of the Dutch East India Trading Company. But,
right. And that's probably, that makes sense then, why the Flying Dutchman,
bingo,
the names, that makes sense. So yeah. This, the one of the legends is the Dutch sea captain Van der Decker, and he was trying to get around the Cape of Good Hope, and he was stopped by headwinds, and he swore he would make it, or he would be damned to hell. And God came down, according to this legend, and told him, you better take that back. You better not say that. And Van der Decker basically told him to fuck off and took a shot at him, at God. I don't know.
Wait, was he using his pistol? Or did he do a broadside? Boom.
That wasn't clear. I imagine it was a pistol. Okay. A cannon would have been hilarious. And really, if you're thinking about it, if you're going to take a shot at God, you probably want the cannon, not a pistol. So after that, God said, all right, fine, fuck you. You're damned forever. You'll never make it ashore. You'll always be wet. You'll only have vinegar to drink. And any ship you talk to will be sunk by a storm. And so this theme shows up in a lot of places. Now, what I could find, I think with this, it's almost impossible to say where it originated. I saw a couple different theories about where the oldest origination of it. One of them, they even said it goes back to a story about Jesus and the resurrection. So I don't know if that's true.
That's some serious Rosicrucian shit.
I know, right? I started seeing people saying that it was actually originated from a Norse myth about a Viking named Stoat, who stole a ring from the gods and then was condemned to sail on a spectral ship as a skeleton. And then it gets a little fuzzy.
I just have to say, those Vikings, they need to stay away from
rings. I know.
Those rings are just, they're just shit to them.
Yeah.
Just
like, yeah. Well, not only was he a skeleton, they gave him, and this is where it gets fuzzy, he had to wear a burning cloak or robe, depending on who you ask. But he was on fire as a skeleton, and he was eternally sailing.
So, like the Ghost Rider. Yeah.
So, a Ghost Rider, probably. But these variations, you start to see this theme come up a lot.
You know, it makes a lot of sense. Ships were lost all the time.
Yeah.
People didn't know. The whole fear of death, afterlife thing, questions about favor with God and such, and heaven and hell. It's rife for mythology.
Totally. And if you're a sailor sitting on a ship, you come up with all kinds of crap that you hear. I heard this story about this guy, and then all of a sudden it's a legend, and then it's a...
Kind of wonder if that just made people like crazy, like going around the Cape of Good Hope after that story got
out. Yeah, because then
you see any ship in the mist off in the distance, you're like,
You're like, no, it's the Flying Dutchman. It's like, no, it's just another ship. It's just, you guys are drunk on rum and hanging out in the crow's nest. So yeah, there's variations on this legend that include, it really is always something like a stubborn captain who goes against God or Mother Nature or whatever, and he...
It's like Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Well, Rime of the Ancient Mariner is a great example. While it never mentions the Flying Dutchman in the Rime of the Ancient Mariner, Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the story is essentially the same. It includes an albatross, but... Really, it's about a guy telling his story about he was diverted to the South Pole by a storm. His ship was blocked by ice. Albatross appears, and his crew's like, yeah, albatrosses are good luck, and then he shoots it. So you're starting to see the parallels between the water. Apparently, sailors looked at albatrosses as good omens when they were sailing. I would guess probably because that meant that there was land nearby.
That's what I would think.
So then he shot it with a crossbow.
It's a good shot.
Yeah, and it's weird because if your whole crew's like, awesome, and you're like, yeah, fuck that. I'm going to shoot it with a crossbow. You're kind of a dick. And then what happens, his ship becomes cursed, and he's sent north to rot under the burning sun. No wind.
No drums.
Yep. No water, no food. And I think one of the lines is about a rotting sea. The crew, as they are wont to do when you curse
shoot
them.
Albatross?
Yeah. They hung the albatross around the captain's neck, which is not the first thing I would have thought to do. I would have probably kicked his ass and thrown him overboard and said, does that count? Does that help?
Well, they wouldn't want to be mutineers.
Right, right. Well, yeah, you got to have loyalty, I guess. You know? We're not going to kill you, but we are going to hang this albatross.
We are going to dress you in rotten poultry.
So, anyway, he comes across a ghost ship. He repents, blesses his dead crew. It all seems weird because then he's allowed to go on, and it's like, well, he gets to go on. He has to travel the world like Kane from Kung Fu and all of his story about redemption. But that is one of the places that it shows up in popular literature. It shows up in other places. Richard Wagner had an opera called the Der Fliegende Holländer, which is the Flying Dutchman. Stuff about love in that one. I don't know about that one. But it shows up in other places. I mean, Frederick Marriott wrote a book called The Phantom Ship, which is based on the Flying Dutchman legend. So it does appear in popular culture throughout the 17th, 18th, 19th century.
Yeah, okay. That's very cool. Were there any real Flying Dutchmen?
That's a good question. I didn't happen to find that out. I'm sure some, you know, when you have a legend like that of a cursed ship, you kind of don't want to then name things after it, you know, although...
I know of the real Flying Dutchman.
You do?
Actually, there were some people who kind of attributed it to this guy. I think that the stories hold more weight, but there was a guy by the name of Bernard Focke. I don't know Northern European. It's F-O-K-K-E. He was a ship captain for the Dutch East India Trading Company in the 17th century, and he was known for being really fucking fast. In 1678, he made it from Holland to Java in 3 months. Hmm. Okay, I can look at the world map, and it takes me that long just to follow that route.
Right, yeah.
That is a fucking long distance, and he did that in 3 months. And it's verified because he was carrying letters to the governor of the colony.
In Java.
So there's dates, and they know how long it took. It took him 3 months. He moved so fast, and this is around the Cape of Good Hope, too, which is... Maybe that helped. Maybe he knew how to harness the winds. Yeah. But he moved so fast that people said that he was aided by the devil.
That, I like that story. Because, I mean, that to me, that is where legends start. By going, that's not possible.
Yeah.
Nah, he had help from the devil.
Exactly.
Not God. Which is weird that, like, when, you know, the ghost ships, he's pissed off God. And it's like, he's got help. It's not God that helped him. It's the devil.
But then when we look back, we look at this guy and we're like, he's fucking awesome. Right. He's like a champion at his job or in the industry. Everybody else is attributing it to God, and we're like,
he was a good sailor.
Knew shit. Yeah. He just knew his work.
He knew how to harness the winds. He knew how to. He probably knew. Well, you don't go that way.
Yeah.
You don't take this big loop around. You don't go right next to shore because the winds aren't. You know. Yeah. Yeah, who knows. And that's pretty cool.
I think that's even cooler than making a contract with the devil, frankly.
Or shooting at God, which I wouldn't recommend. I don't know why. I mean, that's where... Like,
I do it every day.
Yeah, I think we all do. But this Vanderdecker, who knows, maybe it's based on Focke or Falk or however it's pronounced. But, you know, because there's a short leap from... This guy had a deal with the devil, too. He's taking pot shots at God.
Exactly.
So,
but did you have a date on the Vanderdecker thing?
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, you know, I didn't. But based on the fact that you have the Rime of the Ancient Mariner was 1789. Okay. So you got to figure, even though he doesn't say it's a Flying Dutchman, it's pretty goddamn close.
Yes.
I don't think they actually put a date on it because it's
hard. Bernie was first then?
What was the date on it?
1678 was when he made his 3 month trip.
The timeline kind of fits. I mean, if you have the Rime of the Ancient Mariner by 1789, the legend surely came before that, and you probably had people telling the story. Uh-huh. You know, you figure 100 years before, yeah, sure, why not? I would guess so. You know, by
from
time
a pure they, guesstimation, yeah.
Yeah. Basing it on nothing.
On what we think.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I am totally all for that. Yes. Yes, we've just decided that is the earliest version. But all legends start somewhere. It isn't just something that somebody made up. Although sometimes it is just it's a moral to tell people. But this kind of smacks of something like this, where people were saying this guy had a deal with the devil.
And then it got embellished.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, because you say he's got a deal with the devil, you got to embellish a little bit.
So that's what the cocktail's about. It's about ghost ships.
Yeah. It is actually made of ghost ships.
Pure ghost ships.
Yeah, Dutch ghost ships.
Spirits. Yeah. Burning skeletons.
When you go to do the tasting, you have to make sure that you drink it while you're going around the Cape of Good Hope. Did anybody tell you that?
Oh, shit. Well, we'll tell Michael that and see if he can arrange it. Okay.
Can you put this in a to-go cup?
Okay, we're going to wrap this up, and we're going to go taste a Flying Dutchman.
The Flying Dutchman. 2 ounces Seagram's Orange Gin. Juice of 1/4 orange. Juice of 1/4 lemon. 3 drops Angostura bitters.
And we are back. We're at the Brixton in Andersonville, Chicago. I'm here with the tasting team, the regular crowd. To my left is Kevin Rotichek.
Hello.
Kevin?
Yes.
Do you believe in ghosts?
I do not believe in ghosts. I would like to, but I do not. And I wish I could believe in them.
Next to him is Rachel Rubin. Do you believe in ghosts, Rachel?
No.
It's like all the imagination is sucked out of the room. And next to her is Bethany Lang. Do you believe in ghosts?
You know, I didn't until I went to Gettysburg.
Ghost stories.
And I was in an attic of a witness house, which is a house that was there at the time of the battle. And I heard a sharpshooter clicking his rifle. And I looked at my sister, and my sister heard it too.
It wasn't like the shutters banging or anything like that?
No, it wasn't like super intense or anything. But it was real enough that I was like...
Somebody lighting a cigarette down below?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so we're talking about ghosts because this is about the Flying Dutchman. We're doing the Flying Dutchman cocktail. And if you're listening, you've already heard the whole Flying Dutchman story. Do you guys know about the Flying Dutchman? Do you know what the Flying Dutchman is?
For some reason, I remember talking about the Flying Dutchman all the time and, like, doing theater stuff in high school. I don't remember why.
I saw SpongeBob with it. So I think that's how I knew it was a ghost ship.
Don't they talk about the Flying Dutchman in the Pirates of the
yes,
Caribbean
Yes, I was thinking
movies?
The exact same thing. I swear there's an appearance of the Flying Dutchman, or at least reference of the Flying Dutchman.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't he the squid guy?
No, that's, No, that's
that's Davy Jones.
Yeah.
Davy Jones, yeah. And he's captain of the Flying Dutchman.
Oh, is that right?
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's the ghost ship. Yeah, he's the head of the ghost ship, which is the Flying
he's
Dutchman.
He's the tentacle of the ghost ship.
That's right.
And it's the ghost ship was cursed because the captain...
Did you say he shot at God or something like that? Took a shot at God?
Yeah.
What a knucklehead.
And it seems to be like a story that just keeps happening. Like there are all these different kinds of ghost ship stories where the captain does something to piss off God.
There is a terrible movie called Ghost Ship, by the way.
Why is it terrible? I saw it. That first scene.
I've never seen it, but I just heard. I'm sorry to offend you.
It was enlightening.
Yeah.
I've never seen people vivisected that way. Now everybody's going to go rent Ghost Ship.
That's right. After you watch Ghost Ship, return to the podcast, please. And listen to us drink the Flying Dutchman. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so I was actually surprised that there weren't, like, a gazillion Flying Dutchmen. because like it's so popular, and I think everybody knows or has heard those words before, and so it's like part of our cultural vernacular in a way. And yet, like the Derby, when we were looking up the Derby, there were like so many. Every bartender in town had a Derby of his own creation because, you know, you want to have a cocktail named after a party with horses. And so, like, it's a part of regular culture enough that it's going to draw attention. But according to Jay, he could only find one.
Wow.
One source.
It must be good.
The Flying Dutchman coming right up.
It's loaded with citrus. Like all these cocktails. I'm so excited.
It's the gin.
Right on.
Smells awesome.
Do you think that's real orange, or do you think it's a flavor on top? Like, do you think that they distilled it with the orange?
No, it wouldn't keep. I just don't think it would. I mean, if you bake something like that, but I don't think you could store something like that, ferment something like that. So I say it's got to be an artificial flavor.
It says natural flavor, but I mean, that could be like anything.
It's a naturally produced artificial flavor.
Exactly.
It's natural as orange juice you get in the carton is now, which is not barely natural.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard that flavors used in, say, ice cream are derived from things like beaver anal glands.
Oh, yeah. That's like a substitute for vanilla.
Completely natural.
It is. But do you want it in your ice cream is the question.
Apparently we do.
Right, so a couple of chilled ones to sip on, and then here's just a straight one right out of the bottle.
Oh,
like chilled just because, you know, gin, you got to take a little bit of the edge off. Yeah. However, you also still got to know what it's like, so there's a real one.
Okay, awesome. Thank you.
Going for, it does, but the chilled one definitely has less aroma than when he was stirring in the big pint glass. But it does smell nice. Here we go. I'm going in.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice smell.
It's very clean.
I just want to smell it.
Yeah. It tastes like natural orange flavor. It's not like orange soda. It's not like Sunkist.
It tastes that way? Because it smells like Sunkist to me.
No, I think it tastes more like natural orange.
It tastes good.
Yeah, it kind of smells like Sunkist or...
Oh, but you know what?
We haven't tried.
This is also the cold version, though, too, we're trying. But it's very clean, and it doesn't have any... It doesn't taste like Goo Gone or any citrus.
Taste fake at all.
No, and like any citrus like label remover or anything like that. Sometimes you're like really potent.
Does it taste like gin though, or is
barely.
It
barely? There's not really any of the floral, you know. Stuff
I think the orange overwhelms a lot of the subtle floral and
you don't get much of the flavor. Yeah, you don't get
but
much of that.
But the orange flavor to me is more like an orange blossom, which is a very mild orange.
Yeah, it's true.
So I think that makes sense. I mean, that makes sense as to why it would be good with the gin.
Yeah.
It is a little bit of that floral.
So it's not quite absolute mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Thank God. No,
here,
it's quite good.
Try the cold. I'll try the warm.
Yeah, here, we'll try the...
Oh, yeah.
This is so mild.
Yeah.
This is not...
Yeah. So as a citrus hater, how do you feel about that?
It's not so bad. Well, also orange is better. I will avoid them in the bag of Skittles, but I'll eat them before the yellow and the green.
Got it. Yeah, chilled, it's much milder. Ooh.
So is it taste more sun-kissed-y that way?
Maybe a little.
Yeah, but then you got the fire from the gin, which is... It's been quelched, you know, with this, you know, with the cold.
The biggest difference to me between the cold and the warm is just the bite.
Yeah.
Right.
More
but the flavor is pretty similar.
Yeah, there's more alcohol burn.
Yeah. I'd drink that chilled one, like, all of the day.
That'd be a nice twist on a gin and tonic if you made it with that.
It would.
You could serve it with a little...
With lime?
Yeah, sure. You could.
They wouldn't fight?
No.
No, it'd be good.
Or you could really... Go for the gusto and do orange.
That'd be a lot of orange.
It would be a lot of orange.
This Lost Dutchman is a lot of citrus too. It's lemon, it's orange, it's orange gin.
Cherry.
The saving grace, is the Angostura bitters.
So, which is straight up bitter, right?
It's got some spice to it.
Okay.
And that's going to harken to the Dutch India Trading Company.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what this whole story, again, is plugged right back into. Because it was all about the Cape of Good Hope. It was all about getting around to get to India so that you could make bitters.
And bitters itself, does bitters have alcohol in it?
Yes.
Okay, so that helps preserve it and you don't have to worry about it. So it's like wine potency or something like that?
It's considered a stomach tonic as well. Okay. So like in Door County, Wisconsin, on Washington Island, they have a bar, which is the oldest operating bar in the United States. And they operated through Prohibition because they got a pharmaceutical license to sell bitters to the fishermen after they out on the lake. So the fishermen would feel all queasy after fishing all day, so they'd come in to this establishment and have a pint of bitters.
Oh, Lord bless it.
It isn't so pleasant.
But it worked, I bet.
I mean, you forget about everything. Your tongue, your brain, where you live.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
I vote we not recreate that.
You can go there now and become a member of the Bitters Club.
You just have to drink a pint of bitters?
Only a shot.
Oh, a shot?
Only a shot?
I think I could do it. Well, I haven't tried it straight. I have
the card.
Oh, yeah, you do. How was it?
Bitters is good.
Yeah.
It is. Right up front, you get a lot of the spice. So if you like cloves, if you like allspice and nutmeg and that kind of thing,
oh, good.
It's good. But then the bitterness hits, and then you're kind of
yeah.
It just like makes your mouth feel all fuzzy. And
I mean, just the thought of a pint of that is horrifying.
Well, I think after the first, you know, good couple of swallows,
yeah, you stop tasting.
Yeah, you're well, it just tastes good after that.
Cocktail time.
Smells so good.
So what'd you think of those?
A classic gin cocktail, the Flying Dutchman. A citrusy gin drink. That's what you're getting. It's a gin drink. Again, no cocktails, a cocktail without bitters. A little bit of bitters gives it a little more color, a little bit of that darker color, as opposed to just kind of a lemony orange or something like that. Gives it a little bit more of that burnt orange color. And again, you're not getting not too much sweetness comes through. The citrus is more aromatic and just to kind of take the edge off the gin. You can imagine that when the Dutchmen drink this, they drink this to fly.
So the alcohol is the Seagram's Orange Gin that I brought, and then Angostura Bitters. It's a drink that doesn't have like seven different ingredients.
Yeah, it's pretty clean.
Is it four or is it five?
It's four.
Smells awesome.
It smells great. It smells fantastic.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, this is delicious.
It is really good. It is really, really good.
Yeah, this one is really good. Lots of good orange flavor in here.
And the bitters with the spice, it's making my whole body tingle. This is a fantastic combination.
And there's lots of really fresh orange flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Not like
none of that fake stuff.
No artificial Skittle or you know, Fanta flavor.
But or it's also
no Minute Maid.
It's also not really overpowering orange.
No, it's not.
It's not like orange juice.
Because like last week, I felt like there was almost a little too much orange flavor, and I like orange flavor, but it was like it tasted like a little bit like a screwdriver to me. This doesn't have any of that.
And this isn't like sweet. This isn't like a lot of the drinks that we've been going after and like really liking had a sweet profile is the word I'm looking for. This is a lot of citrus, and the bitters rounds it out nicely. It adds more flavor without going to the sweet part.
Yeah, it plays very well with the gin. I mean, I was a little worried the orange gin would be, you know, with all the orange and citrus would be overpowering, but it really just rounds it out very nicely.
I like this a lot. I don't know if it necessarily calls to mind a ship's and sailing, but it's tasty.
There's nothing about this except for the bitters that would at all be related.
No rum.
No, not a lick of rum. But, I mean, you think about early enough, I don't think they were doing the rum thing yet. I think that early, when they were first sailing to India, it was about the gin.
I saw this thing that said that there are whales alive today that were alive before Moby Dick was written.
That's messed up.
And how do they know? Did they count the rings?
Actually, that's not as ridiculous as it actually sounds at first. Because looking at their bones and stuff, you can find out like how long they've lived. But there are, let me see, I think they're right whales. Or the kind, like, or they're Finnish, something like that. But anyways, they're well over 200 years old.
Well, they've got to have a really slow metabolism.
That's my problem.
That's what helps you live a long time.
Oh, that's
good. I speak whale.
Oh, you do?
And now you know.
What kind of whale is that? Humpback?
It's a ghost whale.
Humpback. Ghost whale.
Ghost whale, yeah.
I want more. I'm not even done with this one, but I would drink many more. And it's pretty.
Yeah,
it's
it very is. Pretty.
It's a pretty peachy color.
No, we love it.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Really, yeah, it's a really it's good a drink. Really good. It's a really good drink. It's an honest cocktail.
Yeah.
It's an honest cocktail. Yeah. A couple of ingredients. I mean, you're talking about a half ounce of juice.
Yeah, it's not
I mean, that's, you know, it's like the half ounce of juice and the bitters don't fill up three quarters of a shot glass. And then a bunch of gin. What could possibly go wrong?
I like my tea. This would be very refreshing on a hot summer day.
It's also nice right now.
It is.
Because, like, I don't know, wintertime you think oranges, or at least, like, around
Christmas.
Around Christmas you think oranges.
But without a little bit of spice from the bitters, too.
Yeah.
It is kind of warming, you know? Like you were saying, it makes you all tingly.
You could do this. I think this is a winter or summer drink. Probably not spring or fall.
No.
Fresh orange flavor.
Very fresh.
I like this cocktail.
I do too.
Yes, there are bitters in it, and yes, they sail to get the bitters, but really, the connection to the Flying Dutchman is just lost on me. I really don't understand like how this relates to a Flying Dutchman.
Like, you know what? I don't give a crap, because it's delicious.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it exists.
Yeah.
Regardless of its tenuous...
The thing is it barely exists.
Right.
It exists well, now it exists in more than one book. It exists in a very popular cocktail book now. But its origins are, like, thin and sketchy and yeah, it doesn't make sense.
But, you know, one of the interesting things is, as we go through these cocktails, is to think about why these things have survived. And I feel like sometimes they survive because it's a good story but not a great drink.
Yeah.
And sometimes they survive because it's actually a really good drink and the story maybe is tenuous at best. And I feel like this is a situation where the drink is just really good. And regardless of where it came from and why it's named what it is, it survived because it's a good drink and people want to drink it.
Yeah, I would have
Cam enjoyed his. It's gone.
Yeah.
I think the garnish is really nice, too.
Yeah.
We got this little orange peel happening here. And then you got a little extra bitterness from this.
The scent. And it adds to the scent, yeah,
it's
sure.
I think it really helps.
So let's just do a real quick recap. Kevin, what do you think of this?
I really enjoyed it. It's really fresh, really clean tasting, and just refreshing and wonderful cocktail.
How about you, Rachel?
I loved it. This is one of the best ones that we've done, I really think. It's really good. I would, like, if this was on a bar's cocktail menu, I would have more than one, for sure. It's great.
How about you, Bethany?
Yeah, very easy drinking, very clean, not overpowering. This seems to me like the kind of cocktail that you should be finding at, like, a really good cocktail bar.
Yeah.
I kind of like the fact that it's also a little bit different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not overloading with the sweet, and it's... Yeah, there's no cherry fire in it. Cherry fire liqueur.
We'll see you next week.
So I guess that's pretty much it. Join us next week for more fun as we endeavor to try more delicious forgotten cocktails.
What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor? What shall we do with a drunken sailor? Lie in the morning, waying up she rises, waying up she rises, waying up she rises. Lie in the morning, put him in a
longboat till he's sober. Put him in a longboat till he's sober. Put him in a longboat till he's sober. Early in the morning, way up she rises. Way up she rises. Way up she rises. Early in the morning, pull out the plug and wipe 'em all over. Pull out the plug and wipe 'em all over. Pull out the plug and wipe 'em all over. Early in the morning, way up she rises. Way up she rises. Way up she rises. Early in the morning. Put him in the Belgian, make him drink it. Put him in the Belgian, make him drink it. Put him in the Belgian, make him drink it. Early in the morning. Way up she rises. Way up she rises. Way up she rises. Early in the morning. Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Early in the morning. Way up she rises. Way up she rises. Way up she rises. Early in the morning. Heave him by the lake with a running bowline. Heave him by the lake with a running bowline. Heave him by the lake with a running bowline. Early in the morning. Way up she rises. Way up she rises. Way up she rises. Early in the morning.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I'd like to thank Jason Cruz for researching our content, our regular tasting team, Rachel Rubin, Kevin Rutajczyk, Bethany Lang, and Nicole Pizzini, for joining me in the grueling task of tasting the cocktails we discuss. The Brixton and their bartender, Michael Donnelly, for letting us cavort in their liquid playground. Dan Cruz for art direction and editing. And Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. Go to blackliverproject.com to see the show archive, become a member, contribute to the project, and get in touch with us. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter to get the latest news and as-it-happens updates during live events. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, let us blacken your liver.
Way up she rises, way up she rises, early in the morning.